Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It will be the most unusual presidential debate in modern history. The first Trump-Biden debate will be socially distant, no handshaking, and with fewer than 100 audience members. It is a battle for the White House in the pandemic age. Tonight, we're previewing the issues and looking at what's at stake for African Americans. My guests are April Rain, political analyst and host of the web series What's at Stake. Also, Dr. Chris Metzler, GOP analyst and author of Divided We Stand, The Search for America's Soul. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. We want to hear what you're looking for tonight in this debate. Chris, April, thank you both for joining the program. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
April, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Good to hear from you again, April. It's been a minute. Let me start with you, April, because the debate will start with President Trump. He is supposed to get the first question. What do you think it's going to be?
I know that the first question should be about his taxes, right? Which some of which were just released. And however, we still haven't seen his personal taxes for a few years. And yet Vice President Biden has released several years of his taxes. So that needs to be high on the list. We absolutely need to talk about health care, and that's what I'm talking about in my series, What's at Stake? So we have millions of people who have been afflicted with the coronavirus. We have hundreds of thousands who have lost their lives. It's not just them. It's their families. It's their community members that are still in mourning. And one needs to take it to Mr. Trump with respect to what his plan is, because we still haven't seen that. You know, we need to talk about the fact that he is right now attempting to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and this act would leave millions of people, if this happens, uninsured because coronavirus will be considered a pre-existing condition.
Chris, what do you think the first question for the president is going to be?
Well, I think the first question is going to be on the issue of the coronavirus and his plan for moving forward, not only from an economic standpoint, but also from the standpoint of testing, from the standpoint of the CDC guidelines, all of those kinds of things. Because, you know, lately the CDC has revisited guidelines many times. So I think that the whole coronavirus thing will probably be the first question.
You know, Chris Wallace is no pushover. From Fox News, never has been. A very, very serious-minded journalist. Do you think that he, and this is for Chris, do you think that Chris Wallace is going to press the president or Joe Biden, for that matter, on issues of inaccuracies and spin?
Yeah, I, in fact, you know, Chris's reputation is what it is. You know, many Republicans have said that he should not be on Fox News, but there he is. And I think as a journalist, he will press them both hard. I don't think that, as people have been saying, he is going to throw softballs to Biden and be particularly brutal on Trump. I think he's going to ask the questions and demand answers.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the first of three debates between President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden on this race to the White House. What do you want to hear from them tonight? I want to hear from you. Give us a call again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. April, when it comes to African Americans, and maybe this is painting us with a broad brush, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. What do you think is the top issue that they want to hear about tonight from either candidate?
I think that health care is the top issue because it affects everyone, regardless of how you identify with respect to gender identity, sexual orientation, age, socioeconomic status. Everybody is concerned about health care because we don't know what we don't know. I mean, we talked about the CDC going back and forth. There's some reporting that that's happening because the Trump administration is putting pressure on the CDC to change its guidelines. And that's very concerning. You know, we have always considered the CDC sort of to be the gold standard in this country, along with the American Medical Association. And when they say X, and then they literally come out 24 hours later and say not X, you know, the American people, all 300 million plus of us, are concerned about the information that we're getting from what we thought was a reputable source.
Chris, your thoughts. What do you think is, you know, from your perspective, what do you think is the number one issue for African Americans?
Well, I think the number one issue is, in fact, health care. The interesting thing would be whether both candidates talk about what their plan is for health care. I mean, you know, at one point, Republicans said, well, we're going to repeal and replace. At this point, I'm not seeing the replace plan. And I think for African Americans, that's extremely important, particularly due to COVID. In addition to which, I think there is an economic piece, and particularly for small black businesses, how are they going to come back in what form after the shutdowns, after all of those kinds of things? So I think those are probably, at least in my view, the top two issues.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are previewing the first presidential debate tonight. It's happening in Cleveland, Ohio at Case Western Reserve University. I want to talk a little bit about strategy, because one of the things that we have seen a lot of April, not during just the first Trump campaign, but during the course of his presidency, and we're seeing it a lot now, are things that, to put it kindly, the president has known to be terse. He is well known to do a lot of name calling and the like. He has, you know, floated this thing about Joe Biden on medication. Don't know where that's coming from. He has also thrown out what at least many in the black community would consider dog whistles for white people, suburban white women. That's what he's talking about, suburban voters, and keeping protesters for Black Lives Matter and others out of their communities. No matter how you what you think of it, is this working, April?
I think it's working with his base. You know, but they're not the ones that need to be swayed, right? It's the people that are closer to the fringes on both sides. You know, I have a hard time believing with less than 40 days before the election that there are any undecideds at this point. You know, you've had 4 years of Mr. Trump, so you know what he is about. And you've seen Joe Biden for decades, you know, in the Senate and as vice president and so on. So you know what he's about. So, you know, I think that people need to decide, you know, what their issues are that are most important to them as they hopefully register and vote early. That, you know, I wouldn't call it a dog whistle at this point. I think it's a full-on bullhorn. You know, Trump is acute. It's not slick. You know, we know what he's doing. You know, to conflate the movement for Black Lives with Antifa, you know, to send out you know, law enforcement and military force so that he can take a photo op while holding a Bible upside down in front of a church. You know, all of these things are happening for a reason. And, you know, and let's be clear, it's not just about the presidency. The week after the election, the Supreme Court will begin hearing California versus Texas, a case that threatens to dismantle the Affordable Care Act and strip health coverage for 130 million people living with pre-existing conditions, right? So Chris is absolutely right. You know, the Republicans have talked for 4 years about repeal and replace, but now we're just at the repeal point. And so if we lose, you know, this is why conversations about the Supreme Court are so important right now. Because if we lose the Affordable Care Act, and we have millions of people who have been infected with the coronavirus. We don't know how it's spreading. There are chances that, you know, you can have not necessarily the coronavirus, but have the antibodies in your body. All of those things are considered pre-existing conditions. And so if we lose the Affordable Care Act, what do millions of Americans do when they need to find quality, affordable health care?
Chris, what about this suburban women thing? Okay, you know, you're a black guy. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, so let's, you know, let's be honest. You know, when you're talking about suburban women, the president is talking about white women. However, anytime I travel, you know, to the suburbs, there are a whole lot of black people in the suburbs, black women, black children, black men, black families. So talk to me, you know, from your perspective, you know, what would you advise the president about these kinds of comments if he really truly expects to win? Or is this truly just about the base?
Well, first of all, I mean, if I were advising the campaign, my advice would be to understand the definition of suburbia, because as you correctly indicated, it has changed significantly. So that would be one. But I got to say, relative to everything else that he's doing, it is working tremendously with his base. It is working with the so-called silent majority. There are a number of black groups, Blacks for Trump, all of those groups, which I'm not a member of any of those groups, but there are those groups who have been working to increase black turnout. And so I would, you know, relative to is this working from a strategic standpoint, the question becomes, do you believe that your base is enough, or do you believe that you have to extend beyond that base for something else? And I think those key strategic points in any race, whether it is state, local, federal, et cetera, those things have to be decided at the very beginning.
What do you want to hear from the president tonight? 202-319-7810. What about the vice president? 202-319-7810. This is could be the debate of all debates as we move through this 2020 presidential season. So give us a call. I want to hear what you have to say about that. You know, one of the other things that I think is really fascinating to me, and Chris, I'll start with you on this. Last week, I believe it was last Friday, the president was in Atlanta. He was talking about this platinum plan for for, you know, economic prosperity in black communities. I got to admit, that was a side eye. And this is why I say that, is because the president has said since his first campaign in 2016, what do you have to lose? But now he's coming up with this just before the debate and during the last handful of weeks before the election. Am I missing something here? It would have been nice to hear about this 3 years ago.
Well, here again, from a strictly strategic standpoint, I think that the calculation was made since the Biden-Harris team did not release a so-called contract with black people or, you know, whatever they're calling it these days. I think from a strategic standpoint, the Trump team felt that this would be the opportunity to do it. The Platinum Plan is like any other of the plans that have been released. It is the start. The question becomes, how is it implemented? That's the larger question.
Interesting.
Can I push back on just a bit?
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
The Biden-Harris campaign has released a black agenda, and it's right there at joebiden.com/blackamerica. It's called Lift Every Voice, the Biden Plan for Black America. It's right there in black and white, and it's been there for months. With respect to the Platinum Plan, Harold, you are absolutely right. You know, we've had 4 years of Trump telling us that he has been the best president for Black America since President Lincoln, and obviously we can take issue with that. But when you take a look at the Platinum Plan, you know, for example, Trump says he wants to make Juneteenth a national federal holiday. But when Senator Ron Johnson blocked that bill in July, there was no pushback from the president. Similarly, he wants to make the anti-lynching bill federal law. But when Rand Paul blocked that not too long ago, there was no pushback from Trump. So, this, you know, it sounds like he's talking out of both sides of his mouth and saying what he thinks that Black Americans want to hear. And yet we've been waiting for 4 years to see him to do anything on our behalf. And you know, but the only thing that we have seen him do is call us thugs and criminals.
I do have one question. I'm sitting here looking at it, and on the surface, there is a thing. It seems fine on the surface. There is one thing that I kind of question, and it says safe urban neighborhoods with the highest policing standards. That raises a big question for me, particularly in the midst of the racial issues that this country is going through, and particularly as it relates to the police. And I am going to talk about that a little bit more, and particularly I want both of you to kind of chime in on that. But before I do, I want to give April an opportunity to talk very briefly about this podcast, this web series, I should say, this What's at Stake. Give me the Cliff Notes version.
Absolutely. So the coronavirus pandemic has permanently altered national conversation about healthcare in the United States. Between the steady rise of a right-wing lawsuit that I mentioned threatening to dismantle the Affordable Care Act in the middle of a pandemic, pharmaceutical mega corporations profiting off of the taxpayer-funded hunt for a vaccine, the legal battles against gender identity-based discrimination in healthcare, this diminishing access to quality healthcare for low-income people, and the newest pre-existing condition of surviving coronavirus, the American people are looking for answers. So every 2 weeks, we have conversations with lawmakers, with coronavirus survivors, with celebrities, with patient advocates, with experts who answer the pressing questions about what's at stake for America's healthcare right now. And the next episode will be tomorrow, Wednesday, September 30th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And people can go to healthcarevoter.org to register, because we do have a question and answer session and to learn more.
Let me have that web address one more time, please.
Absolutely. Healthcarevoter.org, all one word. And we will be broadcasting live on our Facebook page, also Healthcare Voter, tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesday, September 30th.
Looking forward to it. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. But lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. What do you think about this debate? I don't know. Nobody's talking about that. Well, we will continue to talk about it. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141, in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is the Inside segment, and tonight we are previewing the issues and looking at what's at stake for African Americans just ahead of the first presidential debate. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, my guests are April Rain, political analyst and host of the web series What's at Stake, and Dr. Chris Metzler, GOP analyst and author of Divided We Stand, The Search for America's Soul. Okay, before the break, I mentioned this Platinum Plan that President Trump announced last Friday in Atlanta. And the one of the things that really struck me was this thing about safe urban neighborhoods with highest policing standards. I'm not clear about what that means, but I'll start with you, April. What does that mean to you?
Nothing. It's a lot of nothing, as I think it is with most of Trump's plans. I mean, he says he will require diversity training for police officers, but he just wiped out diversity training on the federal level, right? We all remember the pushback on the 1619 project. He says he wants to champion federal home ownership initiatives, but black home ownership has dropped to its lowest level since 1968, before I was born even, under Trump. So, you know, where has this housing plan been for the last 3.5 years? There's a reason why we're getting all of this that coming out now, you know, on the eve of the election. There's a reason why he just recently pardoned some formerly incarcerated black people. You know, this is all for show. It is window dressing on a condemned house.
What do you think about that, Chris?
I don't believe that this plan is in fact window dressing. I believe that this is the start of a plan. He wanted to roll it out while the Biden-Harris plan sat on the website. What he wanted to do was to roll it out in a fashion and invite a number of people to be able to do that. That mission was accomplished. So I don't buy that this is absolutely nothing. I simply don't buy that, and the facts don't support that, number one. And certainly folks are entitled to their opinion about it. But like I said earlier, this plan is the start, much like any other plan. During the Obama administration, a large part of the plan was what? The beer summit? Really? And so as we move forward,
that's not
here,
true. Let's be fair.
I am not on here to attack Biden or anyone else. I am simply trying to present an analysis of the issues relative to what's going to be brought up tonight. That's really the reason that I'm on this show. So all of this stuff about bashing Trump, and I'm not interested in getting into that conversation. I am interested in talking about what the issues are that are going to be brought up at the debate, and folks can decide for themselves who they're going to vote for. It's really that simple.
Go ahead, April.
It's not that simple, though, when you say that the biggest thing that came out of President Obama's first term was the beer summit and not the Affordable Care Act, which millions of people have had their lives saved because of it. So absolutely, we can talk about facts, and we can talk about how Vice President Biden wants to expand the Affordable Care Act. Is it perfect? No, but it is definitely better than what we had in 2007, for example. So we can talk about what's going to happen tonight, but we need to talk about it from a place of fact. You know, if we want to talk about the
But we don't need to talk about it from a place of attack, which is what you have
there
done.
There is no attack. Facts are not an attack, Chris.
Okay, well, that's your opinion, and it's clearly not correct.
Well, let's talk about another issue. And I know that outside of the coronavirus, healthcare, as well as economics, one of the issues that a lot of black people can agree about is the racial strife that's happening in this country. And, how is Biden going to move, beyond, the obvious? There have been a lot of discussions with President Biden about dealing with issues of Black Lives Matter, obviously vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris. But how do you believe, April, that the Biden campaign can advance this beyond where it is right now? And the same for you, Chris. How can the president address this when we do know that when asked about this in interviews and the like, that his answers have been, left a lot of folks wanting. I'll start with you, April.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, the unfortunate thing is that President Biden, if he becomes president, is going to have to do a lot of cleaning up with respect to what's been happening in the last 4 years, with specifically with respect to the Black community, but with every marginalized community. But, you know, Vice President Biden has specifics. It's, for example, investing in African-American businesses and entrepreneurs. We talked a little bit earlier about small businesses and how they are attempting to hold on during this pandemic. And so Vice President Biden and Senator Harris have a plan for that. Ensuring equal access to credit and capital. You know, you can't buy a house. You can't get a loan. And so how do you start that business? How do you have some upward mobility and start to build generational wealth? Expanding the new markets tax credit and making that program permanent and doubling the community development financial institution funding. These are all things that Vice President Biden could do when elected to help the Black community specifically.
Chris?
Well, I think from the standpoint of Black Lives Matter, we, I think, as Republicans, fundamentally believe in the concept. We, however, do not support the organization. There are questionable financial and other practices relative to BLM.
I'm not talking about the organization. I'm talking about the issue.
Okay.
I'm talking about racial justice and what. You know, and what is, you know, what comes out of the president's mouth about that? And I'm speaking specifically, you know, when he did the thing on ABC News a week and a half or so, when he was asked, and this was in Philadelphia, where the Black pastor asked him about race relations, and he said, "I don't have a problem, you know, with race," but I think this is not an indictment of the president. That's what he said. And I think that a lot of Black people who still hold out hope that he can rise to this particular issue and not just talk about economics. This is about how people feel. This is about, I repeat, this is how people feel about it. What is the president going to do about that? What do you hope he will say about that?
Yeah, well, you know, my advice has been that you need to move beyond the "I don't have a problem with it," because it's a larger question. It's a, it doesn't matter if you believe that you don't have a problem. That's not the issue. The larger issue is what policies are you going to develop to help address issues of police killings, et cetera. How are you going to do that? One of the things for me as a free market guy, I am simply amazed that that folks don't understand. When you're paying $20 million, $13 million, whatever amount of settlement, that's coming out of people's taxes. So what you need to do is address the problem at its core, thereby reducing the tax burden. And so those are some of
I'm sorry, say that again. I missed that. Please repeat that. Say that again, please.
So say, for example, in Louisville, where there was I don't remember the amount of settlement that Breonna Taylor's family got. I think it was, I don't know, whatever it is.
It was 11.
12 million.
It was 12 million. Yeah. 12 million. Yes.
Yeah, but where is that coming from? It's coming from taxpayers' money. Okay, it is not like those people are taking it out of their pockets. My view is address the issue of police brutality. Address all of those kinds of things. And as free market Republicans, I don't understand why we're not doing that. Because it then lowers the tax burden. And that's something that I think the president has to consider.
So does that mean that we can talk about the semantics of defund the police or reimagine the police or all of that, or reallocate funding for specific police programs, training, and the like? Is that what you're talking about? Because
Yeah.
And I because I say this partially tongue in cheek, if I get pulled over by the police, and I'm a black guy, I'm not going to hand over my driver's license and registration and say, hey, I'm a free market black guy. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if in fact we address the issues, whatever the issues are in the police department, whether that is training, whether it is an institutional problem, any of those things, what I'm saying is address those issues so you don't have to deal with the tax issues. That's what I'm saying. In addition to not dealing with the tax issues, a number of these cases are, frankly, just abominable. There's no other way of putting it. But I think as it relates to, we don't support this whole defund the police thing, but I think you have to look at how do you allocate the resources so that, in fact, what you have is adequate mental health or other services and the police at the same time, social workers, whatever it is that you need to do. That may be the systemic problem. You have to address this from a systemic standpoint. You cannot address it simply from a training standpoint, because I hear a lot of people saying the police needs to be trained. Yeah, but we've been saying this for years.
April?
Well, Chris is actually espousing defunding the police. He may not like that phrase, but that's exactly.
No, I'm not. I'm not talking about defunding.
Let me just explain based on what I heard you say. What you said, I think, is that we not need to work on not just training the police, but changing the systemic issues, right? And figuring out how we reallocate current resources to mental health training and support to social services. And that's what defunding the police is all about. I understand that the phrase itself may turn people off, but you and I are exactly on the same page with that, surprisingly enough. So absolutely, there are systemic problems here. And, but let's just be very clear. Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, those aren't the first names of people that we have seen killed by state-sanctioned violence, right? This has gone back to, we can go all the way back to, Trayvon Martin in some sense, although Zimmerman was not a law enforcement officer, but there are dozens and dozens and dozens of names. And so the question once again becomes, why hasn't Trump done anything in the 3 years that he has been in office? And why are we now just getting those plans on the eve of the election?
Whose mind do you think needs to be changed tonight, Chris? Because take the title of your book, Divided We Stand, that's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we always hear this phrase about Donald Trump's base. We heard during during McCain Palin that there was a lot of discussion publicly and privately in the GOP of expanding the base, expanding the appeal. Can that happen? Or is it just a foregone conclusion that we are, like the title of your book, Divided We Stand?
Well, I think that can happen. But again, and as I have said in a number of pieces that I've written, et cetera, the decision has to be made. Do you want to expand the base, or do you want to keep the base and then do some other outreach that you think will get you to where you need to get to? I mean, that's a strategic question that the campaign has to answer. And they should have answered that from the very beginning, like any other campaign. Look, I'm running the campaign for the mayor of Baltimore City right now. Baltimore is one of the worst cities in the nation.
Which candidate? I live in Baltimore.
Pastor Shannon Wright, she's the Republican candidate.
Yes. Okay, so yeah. Go right ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so what we have done is gone back to coming from, look, I'm a
Lincoln Republican. I mean, so we have gone back to what the Republican Party originally stood for. And we'll see if that works in Baltimore City. But again, we made that decision last year when she decided to go into the primary.
Mm-hmm. April, where do you think the biggest deficit lies for Joe Biden tonight?
You know, I think that the biggest deficit is motivation, getting folks out to the polls, right? We've had 4 years of Donald Trump. We know what another four is going to look like, or we have a sense of what that is. I don't think, you know, you asked the question, you know, who needs to be swayed. I don't believe that anybody needs to be swayed which way they're going to vote. I think the more imperative question is, are you going to vote? That's the concern, because there is a lot of voter suppression happening right now, both online and offline, digital and otherwise, that it may keep people from the polls. You know, we've talked about, you know, the United States Postal Service and, you know, the mail-in ballots, how that might be an issue. We can talk about how, you know, polling places are being closed all around the country so that there are less places for people to vote. I believe that, you know, as part of our democratic process, that Election Day should be a national holiday, because there are some folks who, you know, will have to work during that day and might not be able to get off or get off in time. So I think the biggest question with respect to what Joe Biden needs to do is just to energize folks, to tell them that it is absolutely worth it. It is imperative that people vote on what may be the most important election of their lives. And it's not just with respect to the president. Let's be very clear. Attorney General Daniel Cameron, who just announced the one charge against one of the officers regarding the death of Breonna Taylor, and it actually wasn't about her death. It was about shooting into someone else's apartment. He is an elected official, right? And so we, the people, have a responsibility to vote out people that aren't doing things that we like. You know, people don't realize attorney generals very often are elected, judges, prosecutors, district attorneys, sheriffs. So you may not be, you know, incredibly excited to go out to vote for either Joe Biden or Donald Trump, but you need to think about how your vote will affect your everyday life. You know, Harold, you mentioned being pulled over by the cops. Well, it's the sheriff who sets the policy about whether they pull you over because you've got a broken taillight, or whether they pull you over just because you're a black man in a nice car and they don't think that that should be happening in their town. Those are the things that we need to think about that affect us every day, and then we vote up and down the ballot however you choose.
But specifically to tonight, and let me ask this another way, as it relates to tonight's debate, where do you think Joe Biden is most vulnerable? Does he have a blind side when it comes to dealing specifically with what we're going to see tonight?
I honestly don't think that Joe Biden is vulnerable in that sense, if you're talking about specific policies. I think he has proven himself as a legislator for decades. He has proven himself as vice president to President Obama. So it's not a policy issue that I'm concerned with. You know, if we're talking about the economy, the environment, social services, race relations in this country, I think that Joe Biden stands head and shoulders above Trump and the policies that we've seen him enact or attempt to repeal in the three and a half years that he's been in office.
What do you say, Chris? Where do you think Joe Biden may be vulnerable?
Well, I from the standpoint of being able to state succinctly what his plans are for XYZ, I mean, he tends to go on and on and on. So I think he's vulnerable there. As to the president, the biggest vulnerability for the president is to stay on message, to answer the questions and not to engage in shenanigans.
Speaking of which, and I'm glad I have you on here, Chris, because I do want to ask you about, you know, this one thing, and I've been wanting to ask a GOP, you know, analyst, strategist is for a long time. You may remember there was a Fox News interview with the president. This was several weeks ago with Sean Hannity, and Sean Hannity asked him in front of a diverse group, what is his plan for a second term? And he talked about was what it was like for him to come to Washington and who he knew. What was that?
Honestly, we were concerned because it was a simple question. And that is why I say the big vulnerability tonight, he has got to stay on message and he's got to answer those questions. If that question comes out about, okay, what's your second term plans? He can't simply say stop. So that is the biggest vulnerability for tonight, as far as I'm concerned.
I appreciate your honesty in that regard. And I think that, you know, one of the other issues, and this is for both candidates, April, and we've heard, some of the bare knuckle verbal brawling, if I may, pugilistic punctuations from both of these men. The most famous one, I think, when Joe Biden said that he was going to, take Donald Trump out back to the woodshed or to the outhouse and give him a beat down. boy, I tell you, I thought that was hilarious. But, beyond, the funny stuff, April, are you concerned that this is going to get into that kind of mudslinging? And if so, what might that mean for those watching and hoping to, for those of us watching and hoping for substance?
I think it remains to be seen. I take Chris's point well, that Donald Trump in the past has not been able to stay on message. And I think that's a flaw for him, because, if what he wants to do is talk about the policies and how he's made this country great again, then he should have a laundry list ready. That was a softball thrown to him by Hannity, as all questions from Hannity to Trump are, and he whiffed it. And so if they become if they become combative, I think that Biden will win that, because what we've seen in the past is that Trump does not listen to his people. And it sounds like Chris has said a little bit about that he does not listen to his strategists. And I think that we've seen along the campaign, especially now in the last several months, that Joe Biden has pivoted. He has, broadened his stance in some cases. But I believe that he has been, really battle tested. They all go through this debate prep, but I have a sense that Joe Biden took his debate prep much more seriously than Trump did, and that Trump will just revert to his old ways of, going off message and being, calling him Sleepy Joe and all these names and that kind of thing, as opposed to sticking to the policies at hand. And to be honest, Harold, sometimes we watch these debates for the fireworks, right? We can go to, joebiden.com and, wherever Trump has his policies, and we can read about it, but we want to see these people stand toe-to-toe. This is why I am so excited about Kamala Harris's debate against Mike Pence, because we know what that is going to look like. We know that she can stand strong on policy, that she can recite her record, and we really haven't seen Pence one-on-one in that kind of conversation. So I think that might be even more interesting than the presidential debate, to be honest.
Well, certainly those two couldn't be any more different than they certainly are. But, Chris, the reason that it can be argued that Trump is president is because he is not a traditionalist, that he broke molds and broke the rules and tested a system that did not stand up to some of the things that he's doing. Is that a strength of his for going into this vote in November?
Well, it worked
in 2016, the question is going to be, is it going to work? Now, look, if they get into the brawls and all of that kind of stuff, Trump's base will absolutely love it. You'll see all kinds of memes going out everywhere. I know a couple of folks who are in meme production as we speak tonight. And so you'll see that, you know, all the way. But the real question is, will this debate make a difference? I find it hard to believe that there are still undecided voters. And maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I find that hard to believe.
I don't know. I think there are. But okay. I also wonder, I mean, that's just me. What do I know? But
Chris and I are on the same page on this again. I just can't imagine how you could, again, you know, how you cannot decide between Biden and Trump. You know, you can decide, you know, maybe you're undecided about whether you will vote at all. But
yeah.
I can't imagine that you're undecided about which candidate is your preferred candidate.
Yeah, yeah. And that could be, you know, two sides of the same coin, whether you like, you know, Trump or Biden, or whether you're going to vote at all because you don't like either Trump or Biden. So, and I think maybe that's where the real decision is going to be made. You know, final question, you know, for both of you, and I'll end where we started. Do you think that this tax issue, and I'm not talking about just tonight, I'm talking about tax returns, but, you know, between now and Election Day, Chris, do you think it's going to make a difference with Trump's tax returns
I
being out in the public?
I don't think so, and here's why I don't think so. Because he has already employed the same strategy that he has before. So I'm not sure from particularly his hardcore base. They're like, I don't care. He's donated his salary. And you're after him for not paying taxes and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I think as it relates to his base, the tax issue will not really affect the outcome. The larger question, though, is to the extent that there are undecided people, meaning, you know, whether I'm going to vote at all, it may have an impact.
Hmm. What do you think, April?
I think Chris is right on this again, you know, and I think messaging by the Biden campaign is going to be very crucial here. You know, I know that I paid more than $750 in the year before, right? And you know, and so, you know, I think that's part of it. You know, you have the teacher, you have the garbage, you know, you have the garbage man, you have the postal employee say, hey, I paid more than that. If you bring it home to folks, that might make a difference and might motivate people to the poll, but to the polls. But, you know, if we've decided that people are not undecided, and in other words, they know who they're going to vote for, you know, the taxes, just like everything else, you know, it seems like every week, you know, every month, something amazing that would disqualify anybody else, you know, is discovered. And yet, you know, his base keeps on moving. I mean, I want to remind folks that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. So the base of Donald Trump was not enough with respect to the popular vote. And it seems that some of his base, because of things that have happened, because of coronavirus and so on, have been siphoned off. Now,
April,
where those people are going to be?
April, yes. I got to go. I got to get my popcorn and my jujubes. I'm out of time. This is going to be a good one. Dr. Chris Metzler and April Rain, I appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to
us. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, September 29th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.